Okay, all right, thanks everyone for coming. Thank you so much for Josh for hosting. It's been an amazing night. By Kurtz. So we're going to do this, so Chabura, so we're going to learn Refuah Shleima, Yamna
Bat. Yamna Bat Iza.
Yamna Bat Iza, and also
Shoshana Bat Aryeh. Josh's
grandma passed away this morning. So we're going to, she's a big Zionist, and she's a big supporter of the state, and for her to pass on the Yamach Mood, it's big deal. So we'll learn the way that Shmas.
Thank you, Shoshana Bat Aryeh. I appreciate that.
Shoshana Bat Aryeh.
I want to just do something like, I don't usually like the Saudi thing, but I want to really thank Sam for like doing this. He does this relentlessly, and I really appreciate him being on me. Not only for setting these things up, but also like pushing me to go, and he does this with such eager, and it's a big deal, so I really appreciate it.
It's good for the community.
And before we leave today, someone should volunteer to do the next one.
Well, I second that. Amen v'amen. A lot of hakar tov to Sam for organizing, Josh for hosting, and again, it should be a schus for Aliyas Hashama and Refuah Shleima, respectively. And hopefully for happier reasons for,
Amen.
But God willing. All right, there's a lot of questions we could ask about Yom HaAtzmaut, Rabosai. A lot of fun questions. For instance, there's a sugya that you may be familiar with called Asei Doche Lo Sase. It comes up in Yavamos. There's a question in certain areas of Halacha. If a mitzvah, a positive mitzvah, can sometimes supersede a transgression of the Torah. So someone was asking me earlier today, they didn't exactly phrase it this way, but I think what they were asking was, if, like, you know, the mitzvah of celebrating Yom HaTzmaut could be docha the Yisr Lo Saseh of Kolisha and Pritzus. So it's not tonight's topic. I didn't have enough time.
Minhag anyway.
Right. Wait, you're saying Pritzus and Kolisha is a minhag?
Kolisha is a minhag.
All right, so, well, okay, that's... You know, I think Scott just volunteered to look into that one and report back to us on your findings. Yes, but we're not going to go in that direction tonight, guys. Tonight we're going to be talking about a few interesting questions. Before the questions, let me tell you about the interesting svarim that I like to bring to your attention. The main text, which I print out for you, is the Minchas Elazar, the Munkacher. Well, yeah, the Minchas Elazar, right. The Munkacher. And the Munkacher, one of my friends I went to Shalvin with, Michael Rosenfeld, is a big fan of it. He was telling me the reason he enjoys a Munkacher, not just because he has some very passionate and fiery expositions, but also he would investigate and many times defend the Minhagim of the Hasidim. So there's certain Hasidish and Minhagim, some that might not be our cup of tea, but some not simply that are our cup of tea, but they also seem to fly in the face of what is normative halacha. For instance, what's one that we might be all thinking of?
Shachar.
All right, so Zman Tefillah. That's like, you know, the, you know, locus classicus of that discussion. Another one that I grew up with, my family, our Minhagim are Nusach Svard, which means that we are from Chesed. Likewise.
No, Miriam's family.
What was it?
Miriam's family. Also, Nusach Svard.
I thought you were all Sephardi.
No.
Oh, interesting. Okay. You know what happened? I was teaching at Bicultural a few weeks ago. I teach once a week the ninth graders. So there was this girl from Israel, Halili. Her skin tone is similar to yours, Josh. So when I quoted Maran, Chacham Avadia Yosef, I said, Halili, right? Rav Avadia Yosef. She's like, yeah, I've heard of him. I'm like, but he's like your posseg. She's like, what do you mean? I'm Ashkenazi.
Oh no!
And then what happened? I did like a poll. I'm like, wait, so who is there? Anyone here who's actually Sephardi? So then there was the Haron family.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Gabriel Haron's in my class, and I said to, and Gabriel raises his hands. I'm like, come on, man, you're not Sephardi. You're like, you're white, your dad is blonde hair. He's like, no, I am. I'm like, wow, I'm really
good.
I was gonna say.
Yeah, but I'm like 0 for 2 on this one. So apparently didn't let that one drop. So every time I bring Rav Avadia Yosef or a Sephardic source, I say it's you. Anyway, so sitting in the sukkah on Shmini Atzeres. That's one of the big ones also. My family, the Minhag of Minhag of Many Hasidim, is you go and you make Kiddush and then you leave. The issue is that it's very clear from the Gemara and from basically down the pipeline of halakhic literature that it's a sfeika de yoma, so you have to be in the Sukkah Shmi Yetzer. So anyway, the Michas Elazar, I haven't gone through all of the Chumas of Michas Elazar, but I'd love to check out a lot of them. He apparently will defend a lot of these Minhagim, or at least investigate these Minhagim. So one important thing to note, he died, I forgot the exact dates, but not too long, but still he predates the modern state of Israel. He's living in the period when a lot of folks were starting to make their way to Israel, but this is, I think he died just prior to World War II. So any of his comments he's going to make is not actually about the modern state of Israel, but what he's going to be talking about will be, of course, relevant for it. Source number two tonight we're going to look at, just very, very briefly.
Yeah, the mandate, though. British mandate.
Exactly, the British mandate. So people were already there, but it still wasn't a Jewish state yet. The next source we're going to look at tonight is one of my favorite Hashkafa Svarim, which is, it's really a two-volume set, Kovetz Mamarim, which is a collection of writings and sayings, aphorisms from Rav Elchanan Wasserman, who was a student of the Chafetz Chaim. He is one of the go-to, like in yeshivas, he's like one of the most revered names you can say in terms of like Lundus and analytical study of Gemara, Kovetz Shiurim, Kovetz Ha'aros, and of course Kovetz Ma'amarim. And then the third source that I'm just added tonight that we're going to do is from a sefer. It's printed in Igros Malchi Rabbanon, which Hagon, Harav, Eloi, insert all the titles, Professor Mark Shapiro Shlita. Wow. See, Mark Shapiro, you might know him from some of his more English academic works. And what he did, I guess it must have been a hobby or shtick, he took... over the years, apparently, he sent shilas to different poskim, some who are more mainstream, some who you might not be as familiar with. I think like Rav Abadi's in here, and there's a number of other Israeli poskim who you don't necessarily hear about all the time. And he asks all sorts of interesting questions. So there's a shila and a tshuva from Rav Shlomo Aviner, who is a very Zionist rabbi. So there you go, guys. We're going to have a Hasidish source, an old-time Lipishus source, and a modern-day religious Zionist source. So there we go. Diversity, inclusion. We have all the genders, all the skin colors. Everyone's included in this one. Okay? There we go. You know, diversity of ideas is what really matters in Torah. Okay, that's another share. That's another share. Okay, so if you take a look, let's jump into it. In the Minchas Elazar. So the Minchas Elazar is basically going to be two parts we're going to analyze. One is kind of a classic discussion about whether there's a mitzvah to move to Eretz Yisrael. We're not going to spend so much time on that because this is kind of something, well, I don't want to say came like Dashu Bei Rabim, I mean in a good way. A lot of people have addressed this topic in the past, but we should briefly review it. And then we'll talk about if there is no obligation to move to Eretz Yisrael, if that is true, what might be considerations to weigh when I am possibly thinking about moving to Eretz Yisrael? Is it right for me? And Daniel pointed out rightly to me, the way I phrased the question, the title of the shiur, is making aliyah, how do I know if making aliyah is right for me, presupposes that it's not a chiyuv to move to Eretz Yisrael. So you figured it all out already. I mean, you know me too well. But let's take
it.
What?
Maybe you're just not keeping the laws.
That's true. That's true.
Even a chiyuv, there's always an element of option to it, because one chiyuv that intersects with a different chiyuv. For example, for example, let's say that you have an absolute deal to move to Eretz Yisrael, but you have a sick parent in America.
Keep it of aim. We are going to get to that. Oh, Ethiopia, very good, Scott. You are five steps ahead of me. Hold that question. Right on a good question. We'll get to this. Toward the end of Tshuva, and someone will, could I have a clock over here? What happens? You know, first we have to ask ourselves, is there a mitzvah to move to Israel? Yeah. Let's say it is, what happens when that mitzvah is in conflict with Kibbutz of Aim? By the way, we're not the first one to ask something like this. I remember, I'm not an expert in the Gospels. It wasn't part of my rabbinical training. But when I was in college, I remember I took a very cool course with Professor Ari Mermelstein at YU on the classical Jewish period, basically Second Temple literature. And of course, Jesus and the boys were around during that time. So in the Gospels, if I recall correctly, I don't remember which one, at one point you just throw out whatever name you want. Basically, Jesus made an argument that how can you be bringing all these carbonos and offerings to God? Is Matthew? Okay, very good. So, Frechter Matthew Akasha, how can you... What?
Matityahu.
Oh, yeah, very good. So how is it that you can give all these offerings to God? Maybe your parents are, I forgot exactly the details, maybe your parents will need a cow, maybe they'll need the animal, and so your service to God is contributing your obligation of kibbutz of an aim toward your parents. So these were the kind of arguments that he made, which is kind of like what we saw where people, you know, you could take any concept in the Torah and run amok with it. V'haftalarecha kamocha. Everything offends me. I don't need to keep the rest of the Torah. I have to reichel kamocha. Clearly, there are parameters to each and every mitzvah, and we'll talk about that, God willing, toward the end. Very good. So let's take a look. This is just the classic. The Rambam omits in his Sefer Mitzvos, when he's counting 613 mitzvos, there's no mitzvah to move to Eretz Yisrael. And the question is, why? The Ramban goes to town on him on it in his Hasagos. Says, what do you mean? Of course there's a mitzvah. There's a mitzvah not just to conquer Israel, but to settle the land of Israel as well. And, of course, comes the Megillas Esther, which is apparently the name of a parish. You know what I feel like the Megillas Esther? It's kind of like when you learn the Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galio Sugya, and then there's the Chacham Tzvi. The Chacham Tzvi obviously comes up in other sugyos, but everyone always knows the Chacham Tzvi. Like, oh, he's the guy who says I only have to keep one day of Yom Tov in Israel. So like, you know, you never heard the guy before, but if he told me I only have to keep one day, you're like, oh,
he's the father of Yachomem.
I'm saying, but when people quote him, you're a big Talmud Chacham, Scott. But the thing is, so Megillas Esther again. I'm just not such a smart guy. I'm obviously Megillas Esther comes up in other sugyos, but that's kind of like what everyone associates him with. The Megillas Esther is common over here, saying, yeah, you know what? The reason the Rambam didn't include such a mitzvah in the 613 is because it's not applicable nowadays. There's no mitzvah to move to Eretz Yisrael nowadays. No worries, guys.
Nowadays, that means there was.
There was, yeah, because when God told Yeshua, Moshe and Yeshua, well, not Moshe, but Yeshua, brought the Jews into Israel, we were mechayev to conquer the land.
Does that mean the 613 mitzvahs aren't immutable? They can be changed?
So today that's a good question. How can this mitzvah change?
Right.
So there's certain mitzvahs that were one-time mitzvahs. For instance, when God tells us to surround Har Sinai and we shouldn't go on to the mitzvah. If I somehow locate Har Sinai today, I'm allowed to go on Har Sinai. Like after the whole ceremony was done and they got the Torah and they left, yeah, there was no Kedusha left to Har Sinai. So certain mitzvahs are given just for, you know, ad hoc. And that's basically the theory of the Megillas Esther, that this was an ad hoc mitzvah for initially conquering the land of Israel.
Well, this is me more questioning your phrasing than necessarily the Megillas Esther, but the Rambam lists among the 613 mitzvot the killing of the Canaanites. Even in his time, the Canaani were already dead.
Very good. So you're mechamit everything in here now. Yeah, so right, the mitzvah to kill the Canaanim fundamentally does apply today. It's just that we don't know. This is the interesting thing about Amalek, right? So, I mean, that's the whole discussion with Amalek as well. Fundamentally, it applies today, but we can't identify who Amalek is. To which, Rav Lachana Wasserman, this is more of a Purim shir, he says, we do know who the Amalekim are today. Now, you're going to tell me Rosalvechik, who said the Nazis are, you know, the Amalekim today. It happens to be, I believe I left my bookmark on this place because I love quoting it just for shock value. He says, right here. Lefi ze b'yameinu, asher zera Amalek miskabre ma'od etzleinu. So he says, who is Amalek nowadays? He says, I have the section over here. If only I could find the precise line where he says it. Mm-hmm. He basically says, that nowadays there are Yidden who have a status of Amalek. And he says, Lefi Zebi Aminu, Asher Zer Amalek Miskaber Mod Etzlinu. You know, in our camp there are Jews now who have a status of Amalek. Vadavar Baraghu Maisis Satan, and they're doing the devil's work. Ha'etzah Hamitasi Lihilachim Negdom Bizroa Mamish. You should literally fight with them and destroy them.
That was
the Masiras Nebuchadnezzar.
That was a skull. Volusion.
Yeah. That's what he's talking about. All the secular people. But there's a technical limitation that Yeshiva Bacharim don't exactly get physical education, and chances are if we tried doing this, we would all get killed. So, but he says, Be'etzem, you know, this is like a step further where Soloveitchik applied them like nowadays to like Nazis and terrorists and all that, and Rav Elkanah Wasserman is busy applying it to Jews who want to destroy Yiddishkeit from within. So anyway, that I say I keep the bookmark there for shock fact value, and it's a good thing I kept the bookmark there, so now you can halacha below the masa. Halacha below the masa.
Is that why Rav Cook said Yeshiva Bakram should also have exercise regimes?
I didn't know. You see, Scott, you just got another topic. More homework for you. I'm looking forward. All right. So here's the thing. Basically, Michas Elazar is going to be citing the Avnei Nezer, and he's going to be arguing with the Avnei Nezer. The Avnei Nezer asks Akasha on this. He says, what does it mean? But Avnei Nezer, Hikshal Megillas Esther. Dim Kane, this is the, we're still on the first page, by the way. First paragraph in the underline. I'm basically going to be jumping from underline to underline to make it easier. Mm-hmm. Avnei Nezer says, Hikshal Megillas Esther, Dim Kane, Lama Mona Harama Mesefer HaMitzos, Truma Umaisra Suchala, Sheena Hogam Ismanazem. If that's true, that Rambam only includes mitzvos that are noheg bizman hazeh, well, a lot of the agricultural laws, at least on the Doraisa level, we are not being noheg bizman hazeh. To which Michas Lazar says, that's a nice question, but you ever hear, this is maybe more like the Yeshiva Shevel, the Rebbe, sometimes you ask a question and then your high school Rebbe says, you're saying good, but say better. You ever hear that one? Okay, saying good, say better. So he says, you're saying good, say better. Why are you asking me from Truma Maestros and Chala? What about like the whole Hilchos Beis HaBechira? What about all the laws related to the Beis HaMikdash and Karbanos that the Rambam talks about? Like, that's a much bigger question. Why is Rambam including the laws of the Beis HaMikdash if it doesn't apply nowadays?
Maybe they do.
Maybe they do, right? And maybe we got to rebuild it and we got to do it, right? It's a good point. Okay. So those are some of the questions. Let's see. Let's go to page Nun Aleph. I have to give myself a card. Basically, he jumps back and forth between different ideas. So to help you, I am going in order conceptually of each topic, but I had to make myself a list of which page numbers he conceptually jumps to. So that's why I do the homework ahead of time.
Can I throw another potential question?
Yeah, by all means.
Does Aliyah only mean the biblical borders of Israel, or does it mean where Israel stands today?
Very good question. Yeah, and also, I mean, this isn't just a modern day question. This is a question back during the times of David HaMelech. He went and expanded. That's what we have Syria, which roughly translates Syria, but you know, I'm sure it's not the precise borders, and we annexed land to Eretz Yisrael. And it's interesting. For certain halachos, it's similar to Eretz Yisrael. Certain areas of halacha, it's not similar to Eretz Yisrael, whether it be agricultural laws, Tumah and Tahara. So, you know, I think there's a good question about that as well. Because if we say that Aliyah to an annexed section of Eretz Yisrael counts as Aliyah, so then, you know, not just for Eilat, which is, you know, that's a classic question, but this is my theory. If that is true, then Bimos HaMashiach, in the end of the days, what's going to happen? What's going to happen is, so then supposedly Sheba Malchius and the Jews take over, and if it's my understanding is correct, we wind up having dominion over the world, we'll just annex the entire world to Eretz Yisrael. And then you can go live in the Swiss Alps or in the or Bermuda or whatever wherever you want to be. And the whole world will have a din of a Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. So that's my very wishful thinking theory, because as you know, I'm the guy who walks around with a fan on Shabbos because I can't stand the heat. So either that or maybe Hashem will just like, you know, cool the climate and work everything out for us.
I think it's a Hasidic idea, but I've heard a few people mention that all the area bordering the Mediterranean is going to be considered Eretz Yisrael.
Awesome.
Yeah, we have to get into is the whole sugya and Gittin at the beginning with the large tosos there, when it talks about the borders of Eretz Yisrael and for what areas of halacha, and do we go with the land that was promised Amram Avinu? Do we go with the land that the Olei Bavel were kovesh when they came back up from Babylonia? So that's like a whole huge sugya over there, which when I came to Sam, the Shalavim, any other Shalom graduates here? Sam, he's also a Shalom graduate a few years before myself. So when I went to Shalavim, we were learning Gittin that year. And they like milked that sugya for all it was worth. Like they like jumped right into like the Tzio Nut and trying to convince us to stay in Israel. They brought us like to like Beit El and all these places where these guys got up there and said, you know, if you don't move to Eretz Yisrael, you'll burn in hell or something like that. You know, something along those lines. Very, very lovely. Okay. So let's take a look. Well, yeah, it was. so we're looking at page Nun Aleph. We're at 8:34. Actually, let's not do Nun Aleph. Let's go to Nun Vav. Let's do Nun Vav. Turn the page. So I might get myself right. Okay, so look at Nun Vav. Just skip to page Nun Vav. On page Nun Vav. So here's the thing. One way in halacha for us to figure out what the right thing to do is well, why don't we see what the Gedolei Torah are doing? And you guessed it, we had quite a number of Gedolim who lived here in the United States of America. If you take a look over here in the paragraph, which is all underlined, he quotes from the Shashua Sevlecha Shlomo from Shlomo Kluger, one of the Gedolei Olam. Very prolific. And so Rosh Hashanah Kluger writes, this is, Shilak Divrei HaRambam, he paskins like this, like the Rambam, the Ein Mitzvah Atab Yeshiva Eretz Yisrael. There's no mitzvah now with these move to Israel. V'hevi Rai Meir Abanam Hatzdikim V'chassinim Asher Yesh B'yadam Lalos. And his Rai is, look at all these great Gedolim who, they clearly paskined like this Rambam because they never even attempted to move to Eretz Yisrael. Vaval pi came lo alu Eretz Yisrael. Maybe the dogma so this is Rav Yisrael Mirozhin, if I pronounce that correctly. I'm not going with all like different Hasidic names. So, and then the next paragraph he does the same thing as well. He goes through, he says, what do you mean you could do better? I know even like, you know, bigger rabbis, it's very obvious that they didn't move to Israel. But the point is, if you go next page and then Zion, where I put the double arrow over there, so it must be very important, so I put a double arrow. If you think there's a mitzvah to move to Eretz Yisrael nowadays, you know, you're all these stories about how like the rabbi didn't have the esrog in the village, and so he like, you know, sent in a secret agent, and like they gave all their money and they ransomed that guy from the parrots, and he did a backflip and all this, just like Mikhaim, like the mitzvah of getting a mahudr dika esrog, right? You hear all these stories, right? So like they're willing to go to such lengths to do, you know, to get like an esrog without any bletlach on it. So then Mikol Shekain al mitzvah saseita oraisa, if this is actually a mitzvah saseita oraisa, a Torah mitzvah that you have to move to Israel, but your Olam is here, they would have given up everything to go to Eretz Yisrael if, in truth, it was actually a mitzvah. But the fact that these Rabbanim were willing to sacrifice everything to make sure there was no batlach on their esrogim, and they could keep all the different hidurim and chumras and all the stories we hear about, and they even attempt to go to Eretz Yisrael, mashma, you know, that they probably held, like the Rambam, that there is no chiyuv to move to Eretz Yisrael nowadays.
And applying this all the way back, essentially.
Yeah, basically they're saying, not only are they taking the Rambam's position, they're taking the Megillas Esther's reading of an omission in the Rambam. You see, the Rambam doesn't say it explicitly. The Megillas Esther's understanding of why the Rambam omitted it.
So you're talking about people going all the way back, or just people in the relative present day?
He's quoting, let's see what other names.
There are probably times where it was more difficult to move than other times, right?
Rikusil Shmelka.
Yeah, it could have been like.
I mean, yeah, it was
easier than it
was. Well, okay, so I didn't put all the sources. This is a much earlier discussion. Tosos already deals with it because there's the classic Sugya and Ksuvos toward the end, which also talks about the three oaths. Someone of the oaths is down to come to Eretz Yisrael b'choma, and that's what the Satmar Rebbe. I didn't bring the Satmar Rebbe here because Dover Pasha, we all know the Satmar Rebbe's position on it. Sorry, so I didn't need to bring that in here. But the Satmar Rebbe basically says that we're not supposed to go up to Eretz Yisrael nowadays. Anyway, in that Sugya Ksubos, which says that in theory, a woman can tell her husband, we're making Aliyah, and if he says no, and they get divorced on those grounds, she still collects her Ksuba anyway. Because that's a she's entitled to want to move to Eretz Yisrael. So in that sugya there, I believe Tosos comments and talks about why don't we have a mitzvah to move nowadays. One of the pshatim given to Tosos is that it's too difficult, or even if we did move over there, if it wasn't dangerous, maybe we wouldn't be able to keep all the mitzvahs properly, which we'll get to very soon. And then Rav Moshe, and one other source to keep in mind, Rav Moshe Feinstein basically says that moving to Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah kiyumis. Mitzvah kiyumis, like we just had Pesach. So we know we're supposed to eat matzah at the Seder. Do I have to eat matzah the rest of Pesach? Well, so I think it's the position of the Gra. The Gra would seem to imply that it's a mitzvah kiyumis. You're not obligated to eat matzah the rest of Chag, but if you do, there's some kiyum to it. So that's a very unique category, because generally a mitzvah is something that if you do it, you get rewarded. If you don't, then you would receive divine punishment for that. So here, it's just like bonus points if you do it. So that's what Rav Moshe says about moving to Eretz Yisrael.
So if we're doing all this pilpul to derive a position from the Rambam that he never explicates, and we're using as a proof text for it the actions of rabbinical figures, mm-hmm. then wouldn't the Rambam's actions speak loudest in this situation? The fact that he did make a kind of aliyah towards the end of his life, when that...
So here's the thing. I mean, even if you don't hold it to mitzvah, an inherent mitzvah of Eretz Yisrael, there's still a, you know, you can still argue that there's a value to living in Eretz Yisrael. If even just to be able to fulfill mitzvos hatzlios ba'aretz, fulfill the mitzvos that you could only do in Eretz Yisrael. So that's the question, right? You know, is there, you could say there's two dinim in Eretz Yisrael. There's the instrumental part that's a prerequisite to other mitzvos, and you could argue there's an inherent value just in living in Eretz Yisrael for its sake alone. But here's the question, what if you move to Israel, but you're not keeping the mitzvos? Is that better or worse than staying in chutzaretz and not performing mitzvos? Which one?
Probably
would you
worse.
Say?
Probably worse.
Probably worse? Mm-hmm. Well, at least you're being a Kai Misha Eretz Yisrael, no?
Every step
but it's like with the Korban Pesach. Like, you have to be down for the Chag. It's like not true.
What was that?
It's like with the Korban Pesach, right? That you're allowed to do Pesach Sheni if you're like down for the Chag, far away.
That's what we're saying. It's not.
Oh, sorry.
No, where I was.
Right, the idea is that, like, if you have the opportunity to do a mitzvah, like mitzvah asay, then like you have to do it. It's like right in front of you.
Right, mitzvah leidecha, atach min sena. Right, exactly.
There's actually though there's a position I just heard this that if you're in Israel for Pesach, you shouldn't be in Yerushalayim on the first day of Pesach.
this is what we were talking about when we were pre-gaming.
You might have to bring.
Right, well, right, and it's true. When we were pre-gaming the Chabura, when we first got, a few of us were around the table just like before we started, we're talking about that whole question. The Netziv has a shita that nowadays there actually still is a mitzvah to bring the Karban Pesach, because basically the Karbonos in general are meant to give a Reach Nichoach LaHashem. It's supposed to give a nice aroma to Hashem. And our Karbonos are not really accepted anymore on those grounds. However, the Karban Pesach, it doesn't say anything about it being a Reach Nichoach LaHashem. And so he says that there would still be a Kiyam. And then here's the question. If there's a Kiyam, it might not just be Mutter to bring a Karban Pesach. There might be a Chiyam to bring a Karban Pesach. So then that's probably...
Fundamental issue with that, though, is the fact that the Korban Pesach is a toldot of Korban Shlamim. Therefore, any halakha that applies to a Shlamim necessarily applies to the Pesach.
Possibly. I'd have to be mine a little more in the study. I just know that's like, that Netziv is what we're supposed to call like a collector's item.
Also, wouldn't we need to know how to do it as well?
Rav Kalischer quotes Rav Akiva Eger, who says, that fundamentally we could bring karbanos in general today. The issue is that we need a kohen who has verifiable lineage, We need to know, you know, what actual Tehillus is. Now, arguably, we do know what that is. We need to know precisely where the Makom and the Mizbeach is. There's a number of things we need to know. So on technical grounds, we can't bring it, but fundamentally, it would still exist. Anyway, we're worthy of its own treatment. Okay. Now, okay, let's take a look at what do I have next on our tour of the Minchas Chinuch over here. The next thing I have on our tour is. Oh, sorry, Minchas. Every other sefer has Minchas at the beginning, so I just mix them all up, right?
It's a gift.
Yeah, exactly. There's got to be a Minchas Moshe out there, right? Imagine like somehow like imagine go to Tzara Chachma, you'll find like 133 results. It'd be so funny if like because it was like such like an obvious choice that no one thought to do because everyone thought someone else must have picked that title already. Okay. So what did we do? We just did Nun Vav. So let's go back to Mem Ches. All right, we do a lot of turning. Okay, so here's okay. Let's say there is maybe not an obligation, but there's some value to going to Eretz Yisrael. Question is, what is on my checklist? I'm doing introspection. I'm thinking about, is moving to Eretz Yisrael the right thing for me? What are some religious items I need to think about? So this Avnei Nezer is just wild. So how do a lot of Americans financially make it viable to move to Eretz Yisrael nowadays? What do? They have an American job, an American salary, and then they could live reasonably comfortable in Eretz Yisrael. So check out page Mem Ches, where I underline that little paragraph over there, Umasha Kosav. He quotes from the Avnei Nezer, Me'atah, in Yadur Adam Be'eretz Yisrael, Ve'ein lo shum shum matzav parnasa. If you're living in Israel and you don't have any means of making a parnasa, Rak hanishlach lo michutz la'aretz, but it's being sent to him from outside of Israel. Maybe people are sending money to him, or his finances are coming outside of Eretz Yisrael. V'adayin hashpas mizonosav ayidei hasar shem michutz la'aretz. Your welfare, your financial welfare, is coming from the sar. We'll explain what that means in just a moment. From chutz la'aretz, mazo yeshiva Yisrael. What kind of Yisha of Eretz Yisrael is this? And then he quotes on page Memtes, he says, he basically says, Ki mitzvah yeshiva es Eretz Yisrael. He says basically, he repeats himself, he says, La'anias daiti einze ikar mitzvah yeshiva es Eretz Yisrael b'shleimus. He says there's something missing, at least there's something missing in your kiyum of living Eretz Yisrael if your parnasa is coming from outside of Eretz Yisrael.
Like part of it is like contributing to the economy of...
But you're living in Israel, but you're not dependent on Israel.
So I'll explain what it means. So what's wonderful about this version of Menchus Lazar is that it was put up by Oz V'Hadar, which is kind of like the what they call the G-O-A-T nowadays. the goat. Which is... Yeah, but I mean, if they okay,
censored editions and whatnot.
Yeah, but with all the footnotes they put in, it makes up for it. They fill in all the censors with much. Okay, so anyway, so they have beautiful footnotes here, which they actually quote the Lashon. What is the logic behind why you shouldn't be getting parnasa from outside of Eretz Yisrael? He says
it's a Yura thing, right? Is it like it's an Emuna thing?
Yes, exactly. It's a faith based issue. So I'll just read for you.
All those people who come here and are like tzedaka. We should say, no, you're not following
Torah. That's another
sure. There, you know, there's your key. I don't want to detract from your kiyum of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. I want to be doing you a favor. You know, it's not me, it's you. It's you know? All right. Like Marissa was like watching, and this is basically what happened. I was sure it's like basically in our apartment, as you know, Dan, because we have your old apartment, it's like open concept. So there was like this movie that Marissa was watching, something about dating and relationships, you know, like all those kind of films. So like there's like these women giving advice where the guy lets her down and says, like, I'm just not good enough for you. Like the anivus. But anyway, okay. See, I like a. Okay, you can learn from everything, apparently. All right. So in the footnote over here on in Lamed Beis, I think it should be in your copies. I include the footnotes. He quotes the Lashon of the Avni Nezer. Avni Nezer, you'll excuse me that I don't own my own set as of yet, but maybe I should. The Yeshiva Sarsol who Kisrol Heim Chelek Hashem Lo Nitzru Biad Shum Sar, because the way we understand it is that there are angels who overlook all the nations of the world. However, God directly oversees the administration of Eretz Yisrael. And he gives a few quotations, and then if you you look down all the way on the bottom in Tainus, he quotes that Eretz Yisrael Mashkos HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'atzmo, God directly sustains Eretz Yisrael, V'chol Ha'ol Ma'idei Shliach, and the rest are through intermediaries. Next underline, V'tziva HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sheyeshu Yisrael Be'Eretz Yisrael Sheyuchutz La'aretz Al Karchi Yibitz Parnasim Ba'amsos Sar Ha'aretz. Because if you're getting your pronounced stuff from outside of Israel, then you're not being sustained directly by God, but through just a shliach. And that's not the ideal relationship we want with Hashem. And now this, with this framework, I love this. This explains a Gemara I always had a difficult time understanding. It says in the Gemara Ksubos, Hadar b'chutzaretz gilu oved avodah zarah. And that's in Ksubos at the end that we referenced. It says someone who dwells in chutzaretz, in the diaspora, it's as if they're worshipping idols. And then I think it tones it down and says, it's not like you're worshiping God, Kamisha Ainlo Eloka. It's like as if you have no God, which isn't that much better. So why would we say something about what you're saying? Like, you know, when I come to a Gedolei Shalom here in Stanford, that's like worshiping Avodah Zarah, like, because I'm not an Eretz Yisrael. So he says, what's the issue? Well, the issue is, it's not that, you know, living in Chutzaretz is directly like worshiping Avodah Zarah, but it's like saying, I don't want a direct relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I'd rather just go through an intermediary, which, of course, is a major theological issue. And you bring up the Rambam, and you bring up like how Rav Moshe Feinstein quotes in a Teshuva that his father wouldn't say Baruchuni L'Shalom as a stanza Shalom Aleichem, because it's like you're asking angels to bless you, and it's like Machnisei Rachmim, in which we ask the angels, how do we reconcile that? And that's a whole wonderful topic before Rosh Hashanah. But yeah.
Given what we're talking about, given that there's kind of a key of pseudo mitzvah, even for Kohanim nowadays to avoid Makom Tuma, given that Chutz La'aretz is a Makom Tuma, at least on a Derabanan level, wouldn't that initiate a queue for all Kohanim to move to Israel?
Interesting point. Right, you're saying there's like just like a general Tuma and Chutz La'aretz, we know where people are buried, and...
Logically,
yeah, that's
regardless of reason.
I'd be surprised if that argument is not made, but it's an excellent point, right? Like, so, all right,
How could, as lovely as he is, how could Rabbi Dweck come to America?
How can aren't like all the members of the Sephardic Minyan Kohanim one way or another?
Yes, but he's only from Israel.
So I have to mention Rav Moshe Feinstein in his tshuva, which he says that it's a mitzvah kumis to move to Eretz Yisrael. He says, but if you're already living there, sorry, Charlie, you're stuck. now, of course, the Gemara and then the Rambam and others codify that there's exceptions to the rule. If you need a shidduch, you need a parnasa, you need to go learn Torah, and there's like, you know, somewhere you could go learn outside Eretz Yisrael, right? Like, apparently Bnei Brak's not good enough, so you want to go to Lakewood. I don't know. You want to come to the CS Men's Chabura. They don't have that in Eretz Yisrael, so you could then go to Chutz La'aretz. But those are exceptions. Those are dispensations. Once you're in Eretz Yisrael, then it's an issue.
Right. Well, I was specifically thinking in terms of coding, because that's an additional view.
Yes, 100%. Just what's my end time? I just want to make sure I pace myself.
9:10.
9:10. Okay. If anyone feels like they need to leave at 9, that's what you plan to your schedule. I will not be offended if you need to go out. I'm just saying, but I'll aim for 9:10. So you know what? Give me like. Just 5 minutes right now. Let's wrap up this tshuva, and then I'll bring in some goodies from these supplemental sources. Okay, so that's number one. Now, he takes it to task. If you look, again, we're still on page Memches, you look at the paragraph in the other column that I underline, this is just a really great example. What happens a lot, I don't want to say famous example, because if you didn't know, then it wasn't famous to you. But a great example of where this comes up is that you'll see many times in which there's a rabbi who's beyond reproach, you know, clearly a tzaddik and adam gadol, but he then says something that seems to be untenable religiously or halachically. And so the question is, what do you do? Do you now say this guy is no longer an adam gadol? Do you say that this theological or halakhic position now is acceptable? Or maybe you could still maintain both and just say, many times we say there was a talentoa. There was, you know, a student who erroneously mixed up the papers or mixed up the idea and didn't convey it correctly. So this came up with the parish of Rabbeinu Yehuda Chassid Al Torah, in which he kind of had all these different statements in there, either about how Halo HaGadol, I think that's Psalm 136, if I'm not mistaken, was originally in the Torah. It was written by Moshe, and David plagiarized it and stole it from the Torah and put it into Sefer Tehillim. He also kind of tries to tone down homosexuality. So, like, he has, like, a whole bunch of interesting things scattered in there. And Ramosha's like, I can't believe that he would write such a thing. It must have been there were heretics who got control of the manuscript, and they, like, slipped in these ideas just so, like, you know, unsuspecting people will read them and accept them. So, similar thing over here. He says, "Vim Cain."
Moshe is known as is a manuscript expert.
Well, so what happens is that he also talks about this thing called the Sefer Tzioni, which espouses a similar position. That he refers to that Parish, and Moshe says, "I don't know who the Sefer Tzioni is." So then I think it was Rav Menashe Klein who wrote, "I can't believe Rav Moshe Feinstein doesn't know who the Sefer Tzioni is." And this must have been a forged tshuva. So, you know, you just like, anyone can play that game. So basically, this is just another example that I'm in Cain. Eich nuchel ahamen, sheitzu chaser shalom, dvarm zorm ke'ilu negdom, mipio kona komaso shalagon akosha mechaber avni nezi zechon levracha. Impossible he could write such a thing. So he basically says in this paragraph here that there were some loose papers that may have got slipped in here and then there, and then maybe like he actually the Avnei Nezer rejected this position in the Hemshech of the Tshuva, but that never got included. So he says, "V'ulai nishar od nayar mefuzar bein haksavim shuba atzmo docha harayim b'loshon chachamim." You know, maybe the Avnei Nezer didn't accept this. Maybe he rejected it in the end, but we just don't have that. He's trying to accept the Avnei Nezer's. He's trying. Someone needs to make, if this doesn't exist yet, maybe Mark Shapiro has done something like this, like Sefer Talmud Toa, which is collecting all the instances in which like a rabbi does this, in which like I have to maintain this guy is still an Adam Gadol. I have to maintain that this is Usser. Talmud Toa, you know, well,
There's a huge section in Changing the Immutable.
Yeah. Right, right. I mean, that was his big work on the topic. And the last section was really good. I referred to when we did the, I think it was before your time, we did that shiur on can you lie to be makari of somebody, or sugarcoat to be makari of someone. So we did this back in the early days. But if anyone wants, I have it written up. So it was in our esteemed panim journal from Bicultural. Is it zechrona levracha at this point, or is it still going? Right, I guess we'll find. Yeah. Okay. Good. So I'm glad to see. Yeah. Because like, if I tell people I publish in the Panim Journal, I want them to see it made it past at least 3 years of existence. So, all right. God willing, it shall live and be well for many years to come. Okay. So the other thing he says, now look on page one test. The other Tanai that you want to think about if you should be moved to Eretz Yisrael, look at the bottom underline in the column on Memtes. I feel like I'm playing Battleship. Give me like coordinates over here. Ki ein mitzvah yeshiva says to show rock bish tzaddik shem how you call yourself kamosa how you nagalim. Who's the right kind of guy to move to Eretz Yisrael? If you're such a big tzaddik that if everyone was like you, Hashem would just have to bring Mashiach. I'm like, well, I guess I'm just not such a big tzaddik, so maybe I should be moving to Eretz Yisrael according to that logic. And if you look over here on the last paragraph on that same page, when the Minchas Elazar is commenting on it, he says, what kind of guy are we talking about? What kind of person is this? Like, if someone's like a good yeshiva bacher who's learning in Chutz Laaretz, Ubal Eretz Yisrael, and he comes to Israel now, Leos ke'echad ha-chalutzin. Now, what are chalutzin?
Pioneers.
The pioneers. What's his parish of chalutzin? Shecholtzim aleihem ol malchus shemayim. That they basically like chalitza. They threw off the yoke of heaven. That's his parish of chalutzin. I got such a kick out of this one. Like, whether you agree with him or not, they're just like, I just love.
That is very good wordplay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's like, you know. Forget like you know whether hashkafically you're on the same page. That's just like you just gotta appreciate how he threw in that zinger right over there. Uproishman Alimat HaTorah. So what, you're just gonna like work the land now? You're gonna become a Baal Bas who's working the land. And so basically he takes issue with this. I think he had another good zinger over here. Ah, yeah, if you turn to the next page, page Nun at the top, and he says, Ukumosha yochol yos psik reshe of lo yamos. He says, you know, what's the class psik reshe job is cut off the head of the chicken. Of course, it's going to die. So you're going to be over a meister shechita. So, you know, if you're going to move to Eretz Yisrael, at least in his time, they didn't have the Hezer yeshivas back then. So maybe we have a good answer now. But you're not going to be able to learn Torah the same way you could learn a chutzaretz. And look in the parentheses, another zinger over there. He says, what's mean psik reshe? She yivsok rosha measik b'torah. He's saying that your head is going to be decapitated from being able to learn Torah if you go there. So another just like really fun play on words that he threw in over there. It's really fun when, like, you know, you're so fluent in like the Lashon Chachamim that you could start doing things like that. I really admire it. Okay. So let's flip the page. Let's get to the conclusion. Let's get to the conclusion. So if you look on page Nun Zion. There are actually not Nun Zion. Let's get to the page and Zion. So he quotes from from the Zeta. I didn't even realize this. From the Pnei Yehoshua. And the Pnei Yehoshua basically makes the point, if you look at the bottom of the first column there, remember we asked the question, let's say I just moved to Eretz Yisrael, but I don't plan on keeping mitzvos. Is it better to not keep mitzvos in Chutz Eretz or to keep not keep mitzvos in Eretz Yisrael? So he says, you would think if I go to Israel, then maybe the land will have the Kedushas Eretz will have an effect on me, and I'll be moved to do tshuva. However, let's say you just happen to live there by coincidence. You happen to get some high-tech job and it was located in Israel, so I guess I'll move to Israel. Or maybe you just happen to be born there. Or you go there because of the cherry tomatoes. You see like Stan with us and all that. Like the cherry tomatoes. And there's very good arguments to support Eretz Yisrael, but cherry tomatoes is not one of them. But that seems to be what he's critiquing, even before it was a thing. He's like, if you're, you know, because of the cherry tomatoes. And certainly someone who's certainly not harnessing the Kedushas Haaretz, but actually you're denigrating the Kedushas Haaretz when you're there. Be Michal Shabbos Bifar Hesia. You're going in the parades that are celebrating Averas. You know, you're doing those things right in Eretz Yisrael. Leilich Acher Yitzro Hara. Lo Dibra Torah B'meisim Adrab. All of Nemar V'Savo V'Titmu Es Artzi Unachalti Santem Lito Eva. So he says it's actually worse. Eretz Yisrael is a huge opportunity. It's an opportunity to rise to a higher level. But Rav Moshe Shcherbach in the Tshuva, he says that when you make aliyah, it also has to be an aliyah kipshuto, which what I think he means is it should be a spiritual aliyah, not just a physical aliyah. It's kind of like the Rashi when he says, like, you know, malachim, and he says malachim mamish, and you're like, what do you mean malachim mamish? Like angels or messenger, you know, like, so like mamish didn't exactly explain anything, but that's what I think Rav Moshe Shcherbach actually meant. Now, if you flip to the final page, this is the last page in the Tshuva, as we have about 10 minutes left. We get to Scott's question, all the way from the beginning. Remember we talked about keep it of aim? Mm-hmm. So he addresses precisely that point in the paragraph that I even double underlined the words keep it of aim. We'll read it. He quotes from the Shabbat Tshuva's Beis Shlomo, Shehele Barucha the Yeshivas Eretz Yisrael, Eino Doche Mitzvahs Kibud of Aim. It will not supersede the Mitzvah Kibud of Aim. And if I think in the footnotes, which I looked at this, I went through this like 3 months ago, so that's why you're like, if you're wondering why I'm still. So he says, Dahari Yaakovinu, Ozav, this is Pechas, the first one. Dahari Yaakovinu, Ozav es Eretz Yisrael, b'mitzvos aviv imo. The Yaakovinu he left Eretz Yisrael by the commandment of his father and mother. Remember, and Rivka's like, you know, run before they kill you. So he left Eretz Yisrael due to fulfilling Kibud Aim. So if your parents are in Chutz La'aretz and you want to leave to Eretz Yisrael, you might be contravening the mitzvah Kibud Aim.
Kibud Aim and not Pikud
Nefesh. That, I think you're correct. I think that's how you'd be Doche. You would say that, well, he wasn't leaving because his parents told him, Rivka told him to. He was leaving because Esau would kill him, and Rivka was just informing him, by the way, he wants to kill you right now. I think that's an excellent retort.
There would not be a reason to leave Israel. A lot of people want to
Yeah. You know, the issue is I have the opposite problem. My parents moved to Eretz Yisrael. So now everything's stacked against me.
What's the problem?
You're like, we'll get a new assistant rabbi. Yay! I'm just messing. And that's another thing to consider if your parents did not move to Eretz Yisrael. And so then maybe there's been a key bit of an aim to stay here in America. And one really cool... Probably not. There is, you know, kind of like S is the word, Aleph Suf is like a reboy that includes other things in there. Another question would be, what about grandparents? You see, grandparents, an interesting child. You know, is there an inherent mitzvah to respect one's grandparents? Or is it just that, well, I have a mitzvah kibud av v'aim, and part of the way I'm mechabed my parents is by being mechabed their parents. But then there's a question in Makos that if, you know, in the whole sugya of shogeg, so what happens if my, you know, Rechman Eltzan, my grandfather, b'shogeg, kills my father, so would I have a mitzvah to kill my grandfather? Well, it might depend if there's an intrinsic mitzvah to be mechabed him, or if it comes from my father, so if it comes from my father, then it could be a goal down for my father against my grandfather. So it's like,
should it be similar to, like, the laws of incest?
In what respect?
When you get that extra step removed, it's a durabanan, not a
durabanan. Oh, yeah, yeah. I'd have to go back to all the, you know, this is like one of the favorite sugyos for all the modern Orthodox high schools in Kiddushin in the Lamed area, to do all the kibud av v'aim kind of stuff. So it'd have to be ma'ayan back and all that. Alas, we were studying Bava Kamma and Gittin and all that stuff instead. Or we're doing the beginning of the first paragraph of Kiddushin. So we were focused on like the sugyos of shlichus and all that.
No sukkah?
What?
No sukkah?
Sukkah, you do lulav hagazel. You do lulav hagazel for. Yeah, yeah. Sorry, Shiva's more.
Shana ben Israel in Shalvim get is sukkah.
We did sukkah as like the post Pesach Mesech.
Okay,
could have changed. Anyway, so one last little tidbit. I'd be remiss if I didn't share this with you guys. Look where I put the double lined arrow. This wasn't put in by the printer, by the way. I put it in because I thought it was. He says. V'gam yishlamar, ki b'yameinu elu sh'asu meha mischadshim alivkarim, ha'olim umisparzim. So those who are going to Israel and they're just going there to party it up in Tel Aviv or to do whatever they're planning and doing with their kfira, they're not going there in order to increase Torah observance. B'chi ha'gavna yishlamar, gam rabo seinu harambanu d'meha yodu, she'ein lehishtadl b'mitzvah kazo. Even the Rambam, who took issue with the Rambam, who was Eish Lahava against the Rambam, or at least the Megillah, you know, that whole reading of the Rambam. He's like, how could the Rambam leave out the mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? And he goes in, it's worth reading through the Hasagos of Ramban on it. I didn't bring it with me, but it's worth taking a look at his Hasagos. So he's saying, even the Ramban, who argue vociferously, vehemently oppose this Rambam and said there is indeed a mitzvah to move to Israel nowadays. He says, if you're moving to Israel, not for the right reasons, even the Ramban would say, maybe you're better off not moving to Israel.
Why do you think the Ramban would say that?
Because of the arguments we saw about how you have to be going there to keep the mitzvahs, observe the mitzvahs.
Is that the argument the Ramban is making, or is that the argument other people?
I hear your point, Scott. I'm not convinced that the Ramban would be in agreement with him, but I think it's just a remarkable claim that if you look at how strong the Hasagos of Ramban is, like the Lashon there, I can't do it justice. Like, it's hard to believe that Ramban would be flinching in any, like, it's unequivocal. He's like, there's an absolute chiyuv, non-negotiable, you know? If something's a chiyuv, you gotta do it.
So
Dan, you're raising a very important question. Generally, we say, like, this is like the question all the time, like, you know, when we get people to come into shul.
Right.
So we said this is like a perennial discussion we have about people, like, you know, hanging out outside at the 8 o'clock. So this is what happens at shul all the time, right? So we have the 9 o'clock sanctuary minion. So people, they roll in the door at like 10:30 and they're like, oh, there's still some leftovers from 8 a.m. kiddush. I'll just hang out over there. And then they just kind of make a whole scene outside. So the question is, you know, on the one hand, you could say, oh, but I got them in the door at least, like, you know, mitosh lelishma, balishma, or, you know, at a certain point are you saying, you know, something is just like Azazel? Maybe it happens to be idiom Kiddush, you know, it's generally better than Danium. It's like, I'm sympathetic to, this is the issue, right? Cohen's away the Shabbos, so I have to be at the Danium, and there's supposed to be really good Kiddush at the ADM. And like, I just like...
To go to Beit HaKnesset and hang out, but not, at least do a little bit of tefillah order?
Yeah, you just go and you say Ashrei, if you need to get somebody to Sugimagil. But the issue is, you use the term Beit HaKnesset. Beit HaKnesset might just mean, like, the sanctuary. It might not mean the social hall, which is
right.
Well, for socials.
As defined in the Hall of
Code, so there's,
it's at least the hallway before the sanctuary.
So interesting thing to talk about. I mean, this comes up has nafkaminas for Hilchos Mezuzah. What about the rooms that are adjacent to Beis HaKnesses? What about, this comes up in Hilchos Tachanun as well. So the question is, what if I'm not in the room mamish where the Torah is, but I'm in the building of the Beis HaKnesses? Do I still do Nefilas Sepayim when I say Tachanun? So, I don't know if you guys saw the article I put out on it with Rav Mordechai Karbach. He had his whole reading that the Ramah says, it's not just enough that it's a Torah, but the Torah needs to be in an Aron. And the pshat is that when the Torah is in an Aron, it gives the entire edifice a status of the Beis HaKnesses, even if you're not in direct presence of the Torah. So anyway, there's a lot of pilpul on that. But with my last 2 minutes, yikes, I'll bring to your attention two things. Kovetz Mamorim, Rav Elchanan Wasserman, he has a lot to say about Zionism. It's hard to pick one thing. I'm actually going to choose something that he doesn't even talk directly about Zionism, but I'll just put it out there for you guys to think about. Rav Elchanan Wasserman says, because basically, some of you saw, I mean, I started putting together material for a Haggadah, so I only had like 24 entries when Pesach came, and now I think I'm at 35, so I'm just like looking at all the things that I didn't have enough time to put into the Haggadah so I could have it for next year. So when it says, B'chol Ehi Mitzrayim Eseh Shvatim, God will perform different judgments against the gods of Egypt. Well, Chanan asked probably a question that many of us probably have been thinking about. Who cares? They're just like stone and wood. Why does God need to show any judgment against these fake idols? So he says, Ela kavana belohei mitzrayim lahidyalim Hatzomchim michol bechol tkufa asher badu habrios meliba machshava shiyetzil es anoshes ayadam. It's not referring to just the pagan gods, but to the new ideologies that come up in each and every generation. And he talks about socialism, and communism, and all these different things. And he says, "Zeu pesher avtocha lekitz la'azo shvatim b'chol ha'hei Mitzrayim, and b'chol ha'idyalim hazarm ha'mischachim b'chol dor." So basically, Chaim Wasserman, he doesn't talk about Zionism directly, but he definitely had it in mind when he said this.
He said,
it makes sense because the kibbutz him. Yeah, exactly. I mean, he doesn't mince words. Like he holds it out directly in other places also. In fact, I don't think I left the bookmark on it, but I can get you the source if you'd like. He says, I think I just opened up to that bookmark. Okay. He says that the gullus of Eretz Yisrael nowadays is worse than the previous gullios. In the previous gullios, the goyim had power over us. Now it's even worse because he says the gullus gazos od lahayis lihudim ad hayom. But this is, he says, a gullus etzel yehudim. That's what he calls, you know, those going to Israel. He calls it gullus etzel yehudim. Anyway, I thought it was a really nice thing. He says, like, in every generation, I'm not saying Zionism is one of them, but he says there's different isms that come up. And the question is, you know, HaKadosh Baruch ultimately has to reign over all the different isms. So whether it be Trumpism, whether it be feminism, whether it be, you know, all the isms on all sides of the political spectrum, Judaism has to be the sole ism that takes priority over everything else. So that was one last thing. And then the final thing...
ended off in a Rabbi there.
Okay, oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I want to end off in a religious Zionist source, so you don't guys don't go home and say, oh, you know, Rabbi Kurtz now is telling us that we can't.
There are plenty of people who make Aliyah who aren't Zionists, and plenty of people who live in Israel.
Exactly, and that's the chilek. Right, and that's the chilek between Eretz Yisrael versus Medinas Yisrael. You can value Eretz Yisrael because clearly the Torah values Eretz Yisrael. Chazal clearly values Eretz Yisrael. But all this discussion is, you don't value Eretz Yisrael, what about Medinas Yisrael, the state of Israel? So one can say that they don't like the fact that there is a secular government, and they can say that I want to be a theocratic state run according to halacha, and that doesn't detract from their love of Eretz Yisrael. We daven in our prayers every day, and you know, Baruch Aleinu and other brachos. We're having Eretz Yisrael in mind. That's what I want to say. Like some people, like they just show up to davening when there's like Yom HaTzmaut prayers. So I want to tell everyone, like, actually, we daven for Eretz Yisrael 3 times a day. So I mean, you know, Yom HaTzmaut is every day, guys. You can come to shul every day and daven for Eretz Yisrael. Nothing's stopping us. And then one final thing from Rav Aviner, I just came out as Tshuva on Shabbos. Rav Aviner was asked a question by Professor Mark Shapiro Shlita in this wonderful book, Igros Machi Rabbanon, which is like, you wouldn't know as Professor Mark Shapiro. So he asked all these different shilas, and the question was about a Talmud Chacham, Havaz Talmud Chacham Achim, Machus in Yonah Hashkafa. Rav Kook was lambasted by the Haredi world. And the question is, how can I respect these Haredi Gedolim who have no respect for the religious Zionist Gedolim? And you ask for Shlomo Aviner, who's a religious Zionist rabbi, how do you deal with these different rabbanim? Basically, very briefly, you could take a look at it on your own. He says that you have to make a macha, you have to protest, because actually says in the Gemara in Bava Metzia that Rabbi Elazar ben Reishuma bar Yochai was punished. That if you see that a Talmud Chacham is being vilified and you don't stand up for them, you will be held accountable because you've been complicit in that. So, and then he says, how do you correct them? You do derech she'ela. You say, you know, perhaps the Rebbe could explain to me how it's mutter to be mevasa another Talmud Chacham. You know, you're supposed to ask a derech she'ela. That way you can do it. So you're making a mechab, but you're doing it in a way that's still somewhat bekavedik and helps him save face. And he says all the way at the end that, like, except for a few very exceptions where some people are just like absolutely rude and have no mitos, generally he says, Anu tz'iri hatzon chayav l'chaves kol haroim. We who are merely the young sheep should have deference to those who are the shepherds. Even if they are making great mistakes. So I remember when I was asking Rabbi Chaim Jachter, who Baruch Hashem, he was kind enough to write Haskama for my Sefer, which hopefully come out in Elul. So I was asking him, like, you know, about Psak Halacha, and he's like, you know, people like you and me, Rabbi Jachter was like, going Olam, you know, expert in all areas of halacha, dying and everything. It's like, you know, people like you and me, we just have to, like, sometimes, you know, just defer to, like, you know, the real guys, the real post-gim on some issues, whatever we're discussing. I'm like, I think you're talking about just me. I think you're one of those good guys. So that's how Rav Aviner was talking. So the humility is something that we can appreciate. And God willing, we should all appreciate it at different perspectives, as long as they're rooted in sources and mutual respect. And Shalom al Israel. And happy post-yom ha'atzmaut to all who are observing. All right. Shkayach, and thank you again. Thank you again, Sephora, Zayazing, Josh.
Thank you.
Shav and Alicia, continuing comfort, and for Shalema. And thank you all for making the time. Pleasure learning together, as always.
Thank you very much, Brian. That's great.
So, something